Since the late Stone Age, approximately 10 to 12% of humans are left-handed. Yet for most of human history, left-handedness has been stigmatized. Today's guest, Howard Kushner, author of On the Other Hand, traces the impact of left-handedness on human cognition, behavior, culture, and health. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. Today's guest, Dr. Howard Kushner, is a scientist and social historian, and he is on the faculty of Emory University and at San Diego State University, as well as a visiting scholar at the Laboratory of Comparative Human Cognition at the University of San Diego. And he is author of, as I said before, the focus of today's conversation, On the Other Hand. Dr. Kushner, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brewer. Nice to talk to you.
Now, at one point in our, well, let me ask you this before we even get started. Why do a piece of research, and you've fairly thoroughly researched the experience of left-handedness? Why?
Well, I mean, there are several different reasons. One is I'm left-handed, and as a child growing up, I always wondered why I was left-handed. My mother was left-handed, but forced to switch to her right hand, as she explained to me later. And then the other reason is I was working, my last book was on Tourette's syndrome, and I was working in a clinic at Brown Medical School, at Brown Hospital in Providence. And it seemed to me that our patients, who are mainly children, of course, and were either had Tourette's syndrome diagnosis or came for a diagnosis of attention deficit, seemed to be left-handed in more than the 12%. And so I was curious whether there was any relationship between handedness and learning disabilities like Tourette's syndrome, attention deficit, and even other disorders I learned were connected with left-handedness like autism and schizophrenia. People made the connection, and I wanted to see how robust that connection was.
And what did you learn?
I learned it's much more complicated than an easy yes or no answer. In terms of handedness, I think the main take-home message I had was that there was this belief in the abnormality of left-handers that goes back to time as far back as we can go. And as a result of that belief that there's something abnormal about them, it authorized a kind of discrimination against left-handers. So although left-handers have been, throughout human history, associated as a left-hand itself as a sign of intellectual and social inferiority, what I found was that discrimination against left-handers, rather than something innate, accounts for the connection between left-handedness and other learning disabilities. So it's not being left-handed, but it's the way people treat left-handers that really matters.
You know, that's so true in so many areas in our society, isn't it? It's not so much what the experience is, but it's the way other people react to the experience.
Right, and that produces damage, right? Discrimination is not without its damage. In fact, always has damage. And therefore, the damage of the discrimination was much greater than the alleged pathology that resulted from left-handedness.
You referenced the fact that as you were growing up, there was a lack of left-handed desks, and you had difficulty mastering cursive writing skills. What was that like for you? What was that experience like for you growing up?
Well, because my teacher was so supportive, it was positive. But I couldn't improve my handwriting because the desks were one way and I was trying to write like a right-hander. But I didn't suffer very much other discrimination in my life as being a left-hander. In fact, by the time I was growing up, being a left-handed baseball player was a pretty good thing. And so, but my mother's generation, it was much, the forced handedness was much greater. And then when I began to do the study, I would interview people from all over the world who had been forced to switch, and they all thought that it had done them really all kinds of damage. And this goes back not that far to people who grew up in the 1960s, even in the United States, Britain, Germany, and France, where I got most of my studies. You can see why these people came to this conclusion.
Well, you talk about some research that you pull from a book that was done, I'm sorry, by some research that was done by a British Columbia psychologist, Stanley Coren, who
Right.
described left-handed. Well, why don't you tell us, how did he describe left-handedness?
Well, the title of his book essentially says that left-handedness is a syndrome, and that there's something defective about left-handers. So his whole argument is that, in fact, his subtitle of his book is The Causes and Consequences of Left-Handedness, and he argues that left-handedness is a kind of pathology, an abnormality. And this book was the most popular book on left-handedness, and probably in the late 20th century. So, and he had done many studies, but I think his studies were, as many studies are, they're inconclusive about left-handedness. And probably the reason they're so inconclusive is that each study probably has a slightly different definition of left-handedness. When I started, I thought this is simple. It's just people who use their left hand. But it turns out that some studies get different results by having different definitions of what it means to be left-handed. So there are these tests that people take with 10 questions. And in those, it's called the Edinburgh Survey, Inventory Survey. And they ask people, do they throw with their left hand? Do they write with their left hand? Do they eat with their left hand? What foot did they move first, their left or right foot? Or what's their dominant eye? What's their dominant ear? What hand would they sweep with? So these surveys, right, would show if someone is strongly or weakly left or right-handed. And so where someone would draw the line in the middle, right, would determine the number of left-handers they have or who is a left-hander. So what seemed to me to be something that would be very easy turned out by the time I was done my study, it was clear that nobody had an acceptable definition of left-handedness, which I thought was really surprising.
Well, it is indeed. I sort of laughed a bit when I read that Dr. Coren said that left-handedness was, in fact, a failure to reach right-handedness.
Exactly.
So clearly,
right.
You know, the epitome of success was being right-handed. And then to go on to say that mixed-handedness, left and mixed-handedness, was an indicator of abnormal development of the left hemisphere, allowing for increased risk for dyslexia, attention deficit disorder, learning disabilities, and mental retardation. Well, my goodness, no wonder people would want to hide being left-handed or mixed-handed.
Right. There are two things going on here. One is the effect on the person themselves, and the other is the effect on research. So many people start with the idea that there must be something pathology causing from left-handedness. And then when the data doesn't show that people who are really strongly left-handed are any different from people who are strongly right-handed, so they change the definition slightly. As you just pointed out, instead of the definition being people who are strongly left-handed, their definition includes people who are not as strong right-handed. So if you want your study to show a relationship between non-right-handedness and learning disorders, it's pretty easy because that you've taken probably half the population instead of the small number of population that's really left-handed. One of the things my book does is it looks at all of the studies that try to make claims about, one, the cause of left-handedness, and two, the effects of left-handedness. And when you're done with all of them, you cannot make a generalization that left-handers have any more pathology as a result of their being left-handed, but as a result of their being switched, there you have a lot of psychological and sometimes other kinds of damage. For instance, if one of the things that was clear that left-handers were associated with was stuttering, and in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, there were these clinics, particularly at the University of Iowa in speech pathology, where they were treating the stutterers. And what they did was they said, well, what would happen if we took these stutterers who all have been switched from their left hand to their right hand in terms of writing, eating, throwing? What would happen if we switched them back to left-handedness? And so they did it. And strangely enough, the stuttering generally went away, which was very surprising. And this became a very famous series of studies. If you remember the movie The King's Speech,
yes.
The king is a stutterer, right? And he was forced to switch when he was between 6 and 7 years of age to become a right-hander, even though he was left-handed. And his stuttering then developed subsequent to that. So this is not a; these are not discriminations without real physiological effects as well.
And you know, again, I mean, we could certainly broaden this conversation out to any experience that anyone has that requires them to change from who they are to who society thinks they should be or what society thinks there should be. And there are absolute consequences, psychological, physical, there are absolute consequences. When I first took a look at the book, I thought, well, okay, this is interesting. But the more I began to read it, the more I realized that this really speaks to us as a people. It goes so far beyond the study of left-handedness, although I did certainly learn a great deal about left-handers. But I got to tell you, although I wasn't quite sure that I knew what to expect in a book about left-handedness, I didn't expect a chapter on kangaroos, I got to tell you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a very odd situation that there's no other animal that uses exclusively And it's all population, just one hand or the other. In this case, one paw or the other. And recently, people looked at kangaroos who are marsupials, so a special kind of mammal. And some of them are, in fact, stand on 2 feet, and they use their arms and they send their limbs, and they tend to favor their left side by 90-10. But it's the only animal like that. And people have drawn lots of conclusions from this recent finding, most of which probably don't have very much to do with humans at all. But it's interesting because every time somebody finds something related to left-handedness, it makes the front pages of newspapers for a couple days. And then people say, oh, we found the cause here. In terms of the kangaroos, the bundle of nerves that connects the two sides of the brain, two hemispheres, is much small as in some autistic patients, it's smaller, and in the kangaroos, it doesn't exist at all. In fact, marsupials don't have this corpus callosum that everyone else does. So making the comparison is sort of wild, but it does show, it does illustrate, as do some of the claims that the gene has been found, how at first you get this claim that we've solved the problem, and then other people begin immediately to criticize it, and then within a few months or years it's disappeared again. So kangaroos serve an interesting purpose, although some people therefore have argued that, you know, kangaroos must be autistic, which is ridiculous.
So. Oh, I hadn't heard that kangaroos were autistic. That's an interesting one.
These kangaroos, these particular red tree kangaroos.
Oh, those are the autistic ones.
But
gotcha.
I don't know how they, but without language, it's pretty hard to come up to the conclusion anyone's autistic.
As we look back, at the history,
Dr. Brewer, can I return to something else you said, because it's really important?
Sure.
And go on. As you pointed out, the thing about left-handedness, it's so much like other kinds of discrimination against other kinds of difference, that I think that really became the take-home message of my book.
Yes.
And I really appreciate your seeing that in the book, because I was wondering, I hope that it didn't seem like I was writing a book about something silly and trivial, particularly in these times when there's so many serious issues going on. So thanks.
Well, you know, again, I appreciate the depth with which you did the work, the research, the work in this book. But you know, again, as I said, the more I looked at it, the more that I went through the material, the more I realized this is, you know, this is a global issue. This goes way beyond whether someone is right-handed or left-handed. This is really about what we do to ourselves as human beings or not, and the consequences of that.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is there's sort of another take-home message might be that wherever society is permissive and allows people to do all kinds of things, left-handedness is not discriminated against, and the rates of reported left-handedness are higher. But wherever you have a society that's restrictive of human freedoms and rights, the number of left-handers is sort of a barometer because the reported numbers go down and the actual numbers may actually go down as well. So it is somewhat like it is connected to other forms of discrimination, clearly. And as you just pointed out, this is not something that just happens in the West. It's worldwide.
Absolutely.
And it's widely practiced in China, India, and in India, and in much of Mexico. So to take 10% of the world's population and forcing them to deny the use of their left hand seems really something serious and consequential. And in China, for instance, they claim that there are no left-handers.
None.
So few left-handers.
Huh.
None. But that seems so impossible. That two things belie that that's true. One is that when Chinese people move to the West, to particularly San Francisco and other places, their number of left-handers increased just like it was among European Americans. And yet, in China today, recently, they've discovered that ping pong players who are left-handed have an advantage. So all of a sudden, the Chinese government is encouraging left-handed ping pong players. So, interesting piece of information, I guess.
We live in very interesting world, and certainly in very interesting times.
Right.
You reference the time when left-handedness, as we've been saying, was attributed to dire things, including a lesser status, which included, interestingly enough, non-Europeans, criminals,
of course,
those with disease, those with mental retardation, and those who were gay, and women, unless the women were ambidextrous, and then that was considered that they were to be evidence that they were lesbians. Am I getting that correct?
Exactly right. Yes, you read very, very carefully, and I appreciate your explanations. I think the one general thing we can say about the left and left-handers is associated with primitivity, and therefore the argument was people who were left-handed were lower on the evolutionary scale, which fit, of course, with discrimination as practiced in the world and particularly in the United States. But interestingly enough, the few studies that were done on African Americans show that African American males actually are left-handed at a higher rate than European American males. And the question is, why is that so? And part of it is probably a kind of irony of discrimination, which is, although African Americans and slaves before them were discriminated against, no one paid much attention to whether they were left-handed or the right-handed. No one really seemed to care whether or not an African-American slave ate with his left hand. And obviously writing was not an issue because, as you know, during slavery, there were laws that made it almost impossible for African-Americans to read and write, even though many did and led rebellions against segregation and slavery. So, again, the issue opens up a whole bunch of other issues we should talk about. And it turns out that among African-American males, the idea of being left-handed is seen as a kind of positive rebellious force. Just like now, increasingly, there is a kind of attempt by some left-handers to create a pride movement in left-handedness. So these are all very interesting issues.
Indeed they are. Dr. Kushner, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation about, on the other hand, left hand, right brain, mental disorder, question mark, and history. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Dr. Kushner, you know, it's interesting, as you were talking about persons who were enslaved, that they were given the quote-unquote freedom to be left-handed or right-handed because, you know, nobody cared. As long as they did the work, who cared what hand they used to do the work? I mean, it's interesting. That within such horrific experiences, there was that little piece.
Right. It's kind of the exception that proves the rule in this case. And it also shows the cultural pressures that may lead to left-handedness are absent. Certain kinds of cultural pressures are absent when people are totally enslaved. I do think that we need to do many more studies on African Americans and left-handedness. There haven't been that many. There was a study on Howard University in the 1980s, and then the University of Cincinnati. But we could do a lot more. And certainly, I think I've been thinking about ways to look at that, to get more information, and to look at other studies, because it's interesting in Africa. Right, wherever there, in Africa, pretty much, with some exceptions, there has been a really strong movement against left-handedness, particularly in Muslim societies. And although it was just as strong in Christian societies and even Jewish societies, so there's a lot more to do to answer these questions more carefully.
And so clearly the myths that existed in centuries past is still floating around in many ways.
Right. And if you know, when we think about it, if you think about the word left, every language in the world, it turns out I just learned there are 6,000 different languages in the world, that almost every language, the word for left has a negative connotation. In Chinese, it means you've taken the wrong path. In Italian and Latin, it's sinistra. In French, it's gauche. And we could go on and name them all. And so that shows there's this really deep connection to left-handedness and profanity, whereas the right hand is seen as holy and sacred. And so that deeper, long human history has had an effect on the way people operate in attitudes toward left-handedness.
You had, as you describe it, an okay experience growing up as a left-handed person. What about other people, though? What's your sense of the broader left-handed population? What kinds of issues, what kinds of emotional challenges were they met with, perhaps as children growing up?
Yeah, well, depending on how strong the attitude of their schools and parents were toward left-handers, the experience would be even more negative. But what surprised me was that even when I began to write this book and talk to my colleagues about it, it turned out that some of my colleagues themselves had never told me and hadn't ever told anybody else that they had been left-handed and stutterers forced to switch when they were in grade school, my same age. And only now did they feel that they could even talk about it. So the psychological damage was strong. Kids were put in, they had their hands tied behind their back. They were put in corners in the 1930s and 40s for not, either for their stuttering or for their resistance to using their left hand. They were literally had corporal punishment where, particularly in parochial schools where nuns would hit the kids' hands with a ruler. And I thought this was all in the old days, but when I did more and more research, it turned out that this was something that was still going on in many, many parts of even the Western world. So I found that really surprising, and I was more surprised that it hadn't had a negative effect on me. But maybe the reason was that my mother, having experienced the discrimination of being left-handed, have probably protected me from it. And for some reason, my teachers didn't seem to think it was a big problem, and particularly because for boys of my generation, playing baseball and other sports became liberating from handedness. In fact, they had an advantage. So it's a complicated issue that surprisingly hasn't gone away yet.
Indeed. Is there an age of a child at which a parent is going to know that their child is right-handed or left-handed? Are you born that way?
Well, that's another good question, I think. And the answer is, people are looking for the one cause of left-handedness, and maybe there are many different reasons why people are left-handed. But in theory, right, people who think that left-handedness is a result of a genetic difference argue that it's already inborn in the child. But generally, most, although not all, studies show that although a child may use either hand until they're three or even seem to favor one, by the time they're three, they pretty much make up their mind, which suggests to some people that the cause of left-handedness therefore has an environmental component. So I suppose we should conclude from the evidence we have so far that it has both an environmental and a genetic substrate to it. But whether or not you can persuade your child when they begin to pick one hand as opposed to select one hand over the other, the evidence is that it isn't that effective, that the child is pretty strongly already there, which suggests a strong genetic component.
At the risk of repeating myself, wouldn't it be lovely if we just let children be themselves?
It would be. It would be lovely. And I think that's where we are right now, is most people they let their child choose a hand. Although the Corn and other people that you mentioned earlier had seen that as a mistake, and that children should be made to be right-handed and therefore avoid what other people had assumed were the learning disabilities associated with left-handedness, not to mention the discrimination.
You speak about a Time magazine article that was written as recently as 2013, which is, you know, not that long ago, saying that handedness could be a window into the biological markers that predict psychosis, suggesting that left-handers are more highly represented among those suffering from psychotic disorders such as schizophrenia. That was just in 2013. We were talking about years and years ago, but 2013, what do you say?
Well, I think these researchers, and we actually wrote an article I did with my colleagues and students looking at all the studies of autism that claimed that there was a relationship between autism and being left-handed. And we found 240 studies initially. But then we did what we have to do, which is to see, you need a large population to make a claim like that of people with autism. So what some of these studies do is they only look at, say, mild autistic people, or it's a spectrum of autism, or they have a different definition of autism. So we couldn't accept any study that was not reliable. Reliability meaning that the way that the information was gathered was the same in two different studies. And so by the time we're done, we could only get down to four studies from 240, where actually all the definitions were the same. And in those four studies, the result was inconclusive. And that was one of the 2013 studies, is our study, being critical of the other studies. So yes, this is still an ongoing debate. And one of the reasons is people just can't let go of the fact that if someone's different, it must have some psychological or physiological or mental impact. And then it becomes true because they discriminate against those people. And as you pointed out much earlier in our conversation, left-handedness is like a window to so many other kinds of discriminations.
And clearly a sense that different must mean bad.
Exactly. And that's what you mentioned earlier about homosexuality. And there was a study in the year 2000 that claimed that gays would be more left-handed than straight people in the population. And what the studies did was, because they didn't have enough data themselves to make that conclusion, they took a whole bunch of studies and put them together in what's called a meta-analysis, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
But no one ever looked inside the meta-analysis to look at each of the individual studies. And it turned out that the authors had sort of increased the number of left-handers in those studies by taking, instead of just left-handers themselves, or everyone who is not strongly right-handed. So, of course, it came out that way. But the evidence that homosexuals or gays or lesbians are more left-handed than, or in the case of lesbians, more ambidextrous, is not that strong or overwhelming. But it does fit a particular political need, which is, if you want to explain why someone's different, it must be something physiological we can point to. And we know that this is obviously strong in our country, where discrimination against color has been so persistent.
You know, on the other hand, it's interesting because you point to, for some, in some quarters, a belief that left-handers are smarter, more talented, and more creative. It almost takes your breath away because there's so many different ways that people approach how they approach differences.
Yeah, on Sunday was International Left-Handers Day, which was a holiday created. First, I thought, here's another sort of trivial thing, but it was a holiday created in the 1970s by left-handers, first in Britain and then the United States, trying to take pride in being left-handed and pointing out the data that shows that left-handers sometimes do very well in terms of creativity especially particularly in mathematics and other areas. And so when you look at the data, what you find is that left-handers as a group have some very, very highly talented members. And then it's sort of a U-curve where you come around to the other side. They also have some members that are not so intellectually gifted. So as a result, you can look at the population and take out certain parts. But what's interesting is, if you look, since World War II, half of the American presidents have been left-handed. Truman, Ford, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and of course Barack Obama. So so given that left-handers only represent 10% of the population, that's 50% of the presidents. That's pretty impressive and gives left-handers some sense that that no matter what people have said through history about mental inferiority, that in fact it's not what the evidence shows.
You know, the other, I think, important piece of information to be drawn from your book, on the other hand, is as you walk the reader through the different kinds of research that you've researched, you underscore the importance of really not accepting research on its face, but really looking at how it was performed, the populations from which it was drawn, and how the conclusions that were drawn were actually drawn. You know, do they have validity or not? Which I think is such an important piece. So many times people will say, well, it was researched by, you know, whomever, and therefore it's true.
Yes, that's a very important and useful point. I'm glad that you saw that in the book. I hope that came through. And I think it's a it's a central way to understanding this. But added to that is the fact that traditionally there had been this discrimination against left-handers, as there is in society all through human history. But in the 20th century, especially the mid-20th century, all of a sudden there were scientific studies of left-handers. And what's interesting is, under the guise of scientific research, and probably not even intentionally, the old values sort of influenced the new science. And so the sort of subterranean message was that there's some truth to this older view, and now we have scientific evidence to show it. And I think you're absolutely right. We have to be very vigilant when it comes to accepting the claims of a study, particularly when we see things that are reported in the front pages of newspapers, and that we should go back and read the original article. And as it turns out, generally when you do, the claim made is much more tentative than it is reported in the newspaper. Not that I want to be particularly critical of newspapers right now, but when it comes to science studies, I'm sure you know from your own work, a lot of conclusions are drawn on the popular end that aren't necessarily supported even by reading the studies themselves. And then by reading the studies themselves, you can sometimes see the tentative claims, how tentative the claims are.
You know, it just speaks to perhaps how far we have come away from really engaging in the due diligence that just we as human beings deserve to engage in order to get a full understanding of whatever it is that we're reading about or attempting to study or understand. You know, nowadays, does it, even with left-handedness and right-handedness, which, you know, still is clearly an issue for many people, but, you know, people are texting. You know, and do you really have to learn how to write cursively? You know, I would suggest that there are a lot of people nowadays, particularly the younger ones, for whom that's not even an issue. They've never written a letter, handwritten a letter. You know, sometimes I will talk to my clients about handwriting something. And when I specify handwriting, sometimes I will get a look like, handwriting? Really? Are you sure?
Right. I know there's a big debate. I just heard it the other day on NPR about whether we should try to encourage cursive writing or eliminate it. And it is an interesting question, right, whether or not this should be done and what the effect would be. But certainly we went through a lot of revolutions in terms of learning and writing. I mean, the ancient form of education was, since there were so few books, someone would stand in front of the class and read the books. That way of teaching still persists, even though everyone can get a hold of all the books they need pretty quickly. So, it seems to me that left-handedness fits in this kind of situation where what may once have been true no longer is. And certainly when it comes to, if it weren't for the computer, I think I never would have made it out of high school or out of college for sure. So, because I can't read my own handwriting, which is the result of my own background and training, but it is an interesting proposition that sometimes, you know, we have to accept things that are different than what we're used to in order to make progress for a greater number of people. So I think you've found a very important sort of connection between what I'm trying to do and what else is going on in the society, and I appreciate that very much.
But, you know, actually, I heard that once you get a graduate degree, there's actually a course that you take that teaches you how to write illegibly, because that means that you're then really smart.
Well, I think that's particularly true of medical schools.
Absolutely.
I spent a lot of my time working in medical schools and teaching and working with physicians. And so I can attest to the fact that no one can read anybody else's writing.
They all took the course. They all got an A.
Yeah, I think an interesting experiment is to go to when you pay for your groceries, if you use a credit card, is they ask you for your signature. You could put anything down there, wouldn't make any difference. So we had sort of a cultural lag. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very scary. Dr. Kushner, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation about left-handedness. We'll be right back,
Thank
folks.
You,
Don't go away.
Yeah.
Dr. Kushner, earlier you referenced the study at Howard University in Washington, D.C., that found that African-American men had a higher prevalence of left and mixed-handedness than African-American women. But there was also a finding that younger African-American men tended to be more left and mixed-handed than older African-American men. Any sense as to what that's about?
Well, I think part of it is, again, it's tied to this greater notion of pride and self-awareness and not trying to be like everybody else. And I think what the study showed is, I think the author said that children with any tendencies to be left-handed have not come to the conclusion, and the author says that right is right. Right, R-I-G-H-T is right, R-I-G-H-T. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of notion that if this is what the society demands, and given the history of what the society has demanded of African Americans, that there's no reason for them to change this behavior, and it's seen as almost a form of rebellion. So I have to follow that up more, those studies, because we don't have enough data necessarily, but it is very suggestive of what we might find. And so there have been studies of African Caribbeans, and in those studies they are they do have lower left-handed scores for males than the African Americans. So that's interesting too.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just that the data hasn't been looked at carefully enough. I was hoping that maybe the next thing I might do is take a look at slave inventories in the South and see if they recorded who was left-handed and not. I don't know the answer to that. I should find out. It's not as if there's one model inventory for all plantations or all slaves, but nevertheless, there must be something there someplace we can rescue.
That would be interesting. I would be surprised if there was the notion to record that, but it would be interesting if you're able to gather that data.
Yeah.
What are some of the other cultures that have negative thoughts about left-handedness?
Well, I mean, as I pointed out, I think that there's kind of a test we can do to see where cultures and societies are negative towards left-handers, which is the number of reported left-handers is always smaller in societies that discriminate against left-handers than those that don't. And you can see this by looking historically. If you look at where there was in the West strong opposition to left-handedness, the numbers were relatively lower than they are now. Now, whether that's the result of actual diminishing of left-handers because they became seen as less acceptable partners for marriage or not is hard to tell. So the question is whether or not these numbers that you find in these societies that are more oppressive, whether that's the result of an actual change in the population's genetics or whether or not it's the result of social and cultural pressures. Probably both are true, but it is an interesting sort of test. Whenever you see a society that reports very low left-handers, then you go look at it, you can see both very little tolerance for difference, and also what you can find is actual suppression of left-handers.
You know, it makes me wonder if there's a correlation between that and societies that insist that they have low or no homosexuality amongst them.
Exactly right. Yeah. And so I think that's really important, or how people define it. This study about gays and left-handedness, when it looked at the data, some of the studies looked at the data, hadn't actually asked the subjects whether they were gay or not. Instead, the authors said, well, we have data on whether or not they're married or not. So they concluded, this is 2000, that someone could be considered gay if they were a male adult unmarried male and not gay if they were a married adult male, which, of course, when you think about it, is totally absurd given
ridiculous.
What we know the pressures against. Yeah, yeah, ridiculous. But nevertheless, there it was. And so people tend to take the data and wrap it around the way they want to get the conclusions, even if they're not doing it consciously.
So again, folks, when you're looking at data, when you're looking at research, really look at it with a critical eye and look to see whether or not the dots actually connect.
Right. And that's not, it's what you've just said, Dr. Brewer, is not an anti-science view at all. It is a science
right.
view.
Right.
The claim to be a science is that you have to be able to test the claims. Right. And if you can't do an examination and what's called falsify the claim, try to falsify it, try to show whether it's not true, then it's not real science. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way science really works. It keeps testing hypotheses.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a very important point.
What was the Toronto study about?
Well, it was interesting to me because the people who conducted the study were, in fact, themselves gay. And so, the reason that at this point in history that they wanted to test this out, or actually make this claim, was this was the time when a very important study came out by some in the 1980s by Simon LeVay, who argued that if you look at Africa, if you look at gay males, what you find is a slightly smaller part of the brain. And therefore called the hypothalamus, and that it had fewer cells in gay males, lower density, than it did in non-gay males. And so this excited the community because there was a long debate in that in the gay community about whether or not homosexuality was the result of a choice or whether or not it was a result of something innate in the person. And so this fit the innate theory, right? But the attempt of the innate theory was that if it's something that's inborn, then we can't be prejudiced against it. But of course, the whole history of left-handedness shows that's not true.
Absolutely.
If people are begging it, they'll find a reason either because it's ingrained or because it's a choice. It won't make any difference. And I think we see this all the time. So we have to, you know, understand that the context for some of these studies is more important than what the study finds. The other reason this particular group of Toronto was interested in was that they had been doing studies on the argument that the middle child, which means you had to have at least three, right, that the middle child was more likely to be gay than the non-middle child. They couldn't prove that in their study, so they took the information they collected for that study and tried to argue that, well, here is a real physical difference then, which then sort of meshed with LeVay's notion of the hypothalamus.
And it continues, does it not?
Right. I think, you know, there's a really big question here that I'm not sure I can answer, but the real question is, why are there any left-handers at all, right? Why, if there's been so much negative attitude toward left-handers, hasn't it just disappeared? In other words, discrimination would mean that if it hasn't disappeared, that would suggest what? That it isn't genetic or that it is genetic? It's unclear. But what normally we would say in science is if there's a persistent behavior, then there must be some advantage for that to continue, right? There must be some biological or social or cultural reason for it to continue. And so people have looked for what is the selective advantage of being left-handed. And they've come to one conclusion, I think, pretty strongly, which is that being left-handed has a great advantage when it comes to battle and surprise. And although this is a very old idea, it's one that's come back again. And so while there are a minority of left-handers, say even batting in baseball, I went to the baseball game last night in San Diego, and there are many more left-handed batters than left-handers on the teams. And that's interesting because there should be like one out of every 10 or two out of every 10 at the most. There are four or five out of every 10 batting left-handed. And the reason is that there's an advantage to batting left-handed. So if you think about what the advantages are, like the Chinese found an advantage in ping pong, a lot of it has to do with surprise. And when the number of left-handers increases to be about the same as right-handers in a sport, then the advantage of being left-handed disappears.
And, you know, perhaps another question is, in addition to why does it persist, is why does it matter?
That's a really important question. I think that the conclusion of my book is that it doesn't matter at all, right? It only matters because people have made it matter. And there may be some small number of people who, as a result of having, you know, language and motor function in the same hemisphere, gain from that enough that there's some intellectual advantage, but there might be equally some intellectual disadvantage. So I think in the end, right, the real question is, the real conclusion is it doesn't really matter. And the question I've been looking at is why people think it matters, right? And what the impact is when people think it matters.
Well, and, you know, again, what you're looking at is not only in terms of left-handedness, but discrimination in general. So it sounds to me like you've got a pretty big question in front of you.
I hope so.
I think you'll be looking into this one for a while.
Right. Right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please continue.
No. That's right. I was sort of just stuttering a little bit.
What would you like to see of parents today who have children who are left-handed? What do you want them to know or think about?
Well, that it's not abnormal, right? And it doesn't make any difference, and that there are both, that there are many advantages in history and other places of being left-handed. But I think among Americans in general, there hasn't been a persistence of discrimination lately about being left-handed. But what I have noticed is that we have many recent immigrants in the United States, and the children of recent immigrants tell very much the same story, that they're coming from more traditional societies, that they have been, their parents have continued this old idea that left-handedness was profane, and they have forced them to switch. And so I hear many stories from them. And so maybe part of the way we can acculturate people into America is to make sure they understand that this is not something that matters much, unless we make some big regressive steps in our society, which I hope we can avoid.
That would be wonderful and important and urgent. Are there books or anything for younger children that parents could share with them who perhaps are left-handed and perhaps are being bullied in school? Are you aware of any?
You know, I'm not, and that's really odd, but it's a good idea. I don't know why no one's thought of it before. If they have, I just don't know about it. There's certainly, you could rescue a history of positive. Not everyone was negative about left-handedness throughout history. There are pockets of resistance and essentially left pride movements. So the famous Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu in 600 BC, a long time ago, wrote that the superior man ordinarily considers the left the most honorable place. And therefore, because it's not involved in war. And Plato in his Republic rejected the popular negative characterization of left-handers as inferior and argued that, in fact, if they would use both their hands, they would be even smarter. And then there were people in the Middle Ages that made this other argument. So, and then in the early 20th century, the British Boy Scout leader, Baden Powell, joined a movement that was very strong in Britain in about 1904, 1910, called the Ambidextral Society. And what they did was they urged that people use both their hands for all tasks, and he said they would become twice as smart they'd be more symmetrical, more intelligent, more gifted. And Baden-Powell's Boy Scouts, people were supposed to shake hands with their left hand. In other words, to learn to use their left hand. So this was a strong movement on ambidexterity. And whether it was true or not that ambidextrous people are smarter, it certainly is useful to be able to use both your hands. In fact, when you think about it, for most things we do, we use both our hands, both our feet, both our eyes. So so the idea that left-handedness is some kind of a pathological condition is not supported by any evidence whatsoever.
Is there a place where folks can go to get more information about you and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, they can just go. Well, it used to be easy to get me online because I was the only Kushner there.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. So I'm right there next to Jared and Ivanka and the searches. But you can go online and just type in the name of the book, and it's available on Amazon and on Barnes and Nobles. It's not officially published actually until the 10th of September, but it's available to order ahead. And so they could look it up. If they want to know more about me, they could just type in Emory University Howard Kushner or San Diego State Howard Kushner and look at the information.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Dr. Kushner. It's really been a delight talking with you today.
Thank you.
And going through On the Other Hand, Left Hand, Right Brain, Mental Disorder, and History, Howard I. Kushner. Again, thank you, Dr. Kushner.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications and is available to you on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Or you can download the free Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store or Google Play, and you can carry Mind Talk with you. Listen to it whenever you like. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk, so send an email to me at pamela@mindtalk.org. That's PAMELA at mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.